morning. It's good to see everybody this morning on this Lord's Day morning. So happy to be with you and to be engaged in this entire weekend series and study with you each session with the goal and with the hope that all of us indeed become stronger, that we grow, that each day is a day of progress. However little each day's progress may seem to us, it is yet progress when we are serving the Lord and indeed closer to heaven than we have been in years gone by. In concert with our other studies, what I would like to do in our Bible class this morning is think about a part of Scripture that fulfills a special role in our spiritual growth, especially when we think about it in context of the studies of this weekend, and that is trying to become stronger, dealing with personal sin concerns, dealing with circumstances that beset us, and all the things that can be of a difficult nature that challenge us in our Christian living. What I would like to do is think about with you the book of Psalms and its role in helping us to become stronger as Christians. In order to make this study, I believe, valuable to us, we're going to have to, of course, be concise in a number of the things that we say, and obviously cannot cover very much in depth about the book of Psalms, the largest book in the Bible, of course. But yet I believe there are some general principles we can learn and then some specific passages that we want to look to. And you will see, I hope, in these thoughts, the value of this book in helping us deal with the things that challenge us. Athanasius, a writer of many, many centuries ago, said of the book of Psalms, while most scripture is written to us, the Psalms were written for us. In other words, while most scripture speaks to us, the Psalms speak for us. What does that mean? The Psalms give us a voice. It is an inspired book of prayers. Now that makes it unique. That makes it different from the rest of Scripture entirely. Inspired prayers. Here's what God would envision people would say to Him. Here is the degree to which God envisioned that people should rely on Him. And taking people in their original circumstances and taking writers like David, the sweet psalmist of Israel, we have people voicing to God their concerns, voicing to God their struggles, voicing to God their resolve to trust in Him in spite of these things. And yet all of these things are at the same time inspired of God. And that makes this book a unique part of Scripture. And it's no wonder if we get into the book of Psalms that it has been treasured by many, many people for many years. You will find editions of the New Testament, won't you, that have the book of Psalms attached to it. There's a reason for that. And for some reason, it has been loved by countless numbers of people. Let's look, first of all, at some basic facts about the book of Psalms. Many of you are probably familiar with these. Maybe some of you are not as familiar with these, but I think either way, they are valuable for us to think about. They're valuable for us to contemplate, no matter how familiar we are with it. The book of Psalms, in terms of the 150 chapters, are not all alike. If you begin to read through the Psalms, this is, of course, something that you will notice right off. That there's a different tone we might say, in the Psalms. A different feeling you might get from reading certain Psalms. If we were to think about them in terms of types, we would observe how this is true. We get a certain feeling or maybe a certain response, or some speak to us at a certain time more than others because there are different kinds. And just like there are different kinds of songs, and these are songs, they are prayers, they are hymns, just like in secular songs, there are different kinds. There are sad songs, there are happy songs, so there are sad psalms and happy psalms, if we can express it like that. The most common type of psalm in the book of Psalms is the lament. That's a specific kind. If you would, turn with me to Psalm 102. And I want to make you aware of a definition found here regarding what a lament is. Notice the superscription before Psalm 102, verse 1. The superscription is, of course, an insert into the text. It's not a part of the inspired text. But the interesting thing about these superscriptions is they are not an incorporation of ideas from the translators of your version. As, for example, the headings are at the top of the page. You might have headings that say different things or something like that. The editors of your translation will give those kinds of headings for your consideration. But the superscriptions now are an ancient scribal insert into the text that in some way talks about the psalm. Not an inspired part of the text, but yet an interesting observation is made by them. Well, look at this one. In Psalm 102, right before verse 1, you might have something like this. I'm reading from the American Standard Version. A prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed and poureth out his complaint before Jehovah. Now that is a definition of a lament. There are more laments. There are more of these kinds of psalms in the book of Psalms than any other kind. There are individual laments, in other words, by people like David. There are what we might call community laments that are not from a person's point of view so much as they are from the community's point of view, the congregation's point of view. For example, when there was a national calamity of some point and the nation was crying out to God. So both of these kinds are found. But what is it? Look at this definition very closely and observe that most of the kinds of psalms are going to be defined in this way. They are, first of all, a prayer. Now that is a specific statement about what a lament is. It's not just a poem. It's not just someone's letter to another person. It's not a diary entry. It is a prayer. And that means it is a communication between an individual who is hurting and God. So understand the context that most of these psalms are addressed to God, and they are prayers, which is readily observed when we read them. Next, observe, it is a prayer of the afflicted. So we're talking about someone who's suffering. And we're not talking about someone who's irritated or someone who is somewhat discomforted. They are afflicted. And this represents that these laments have the personal background or context of serious issues. Now, as we're defining this, let not your mind wander too far from the relevancy of studying Psalms. When you read these laments given by God through human beings who were suffering and dealing with serious problems. You're reading something of how they endured it or how they dealt with it. Serious problems. So keep that in mind. Next, you will observe this definition defines the time relationship between the prayer and the problem or the suffering. Look very specifically, because this is a very specific characteristic of a lament. A prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed. Now, why do I say that is a specific characteristic of a lament? Because most of these psalms, when we describe them as laments, are the prayers that were prayed at the time of trouble. Unlike prayers that were prayed years after the fact. I mean, you've prayed prayers like that where you've looked back maybe on things in your life and in retrospect thank God for certain things and maybe the way things were resolved. That's different. That's a prayer, we might say, of thanksgiving that looks back. But these laments are prayers that are prayed at the time. And how different are the prayers prayed at the time? When we don't know what's going to happen, when we don't know how it's going to be resolved. So these are the kinds of prayers we're talking about. A prayer of the afflicted at the moment when he is, then notice the definition, overwhelmed. Again, we're not talking about some kind of mild discomfort. But this is an overwhelming situation that is unresolved and unknown in terms of the outcome. A prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed. And then notice the final phrase that defines what a lament is. And poureth out his complaint before Jehovah. Poureth out his complaint. Now, what is that? That means that in these prayers, we often see that people are reflecting on what's going on, and they're saying to God, in essence, this is overwhelming me. I don't know how long I can deal with this. And there is a complaint, not complaining or murmuring like the Israelites did, when they just were irritated and things didn't go their way. But a serious pouring out of one's heart when there is this sense of being overwhelmed. And the key is that this is to the Lord. This is not merely complaining to other people or complaining about God, but conveying to God one's innermost thoughts and concerns on the basis of faith that God is the only one who can really respond and deal with these things. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about the laments of the book of Psalms. I hope you'll make a note. Hope you'll be aware of the fact that this superscription of Psalm 102 is a very specific definition of what most of these Psalms are like. Let me just briefly outline also the fact that there are a number of reasons that someone might be lamenting. We have a book in the Old Testament that is named for this idea, don't we? The book of what? Lamentations. And Jeremiah's lamentations were of a specific kind. In other words, there was a specific background as to why he had such sorrow. And what was the background? Jeremiah's lamentations. What was it? Yeah, the condition of God's people and the impending destruction and then actual destruction of Jerusalem and all of those things that were involved. And we see that as a background to Jeremiah's laments. If we're talking about the book of Psalms, we see that sometimes the background or the reason for lament is personal sin. There is a specific psalm written by David. Maybe you can think of which one it is. A specific psalm when he was overwhelmed with the grief of his own sin. And likely the background of it is his sin with Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Do you remember that one? Psalm 51? That's a lament. The specific reason for the sorrow is his personal sin. Psalm 130 is also a penitential psalm or a psalm of sin and the lamentation over sin. Sometimes sickness is the reason. In other words, just like we talked about last night, we have these two broad categories with which we deal: sin and circumstances. Well, we find those as reasons for lament in the book of Psalms. Personal sin, like Psalm 51 or Psalm 130. Also circumstances. In other words, things out of our control, but yet we're dealing with them. And they overwhelm us, and we cry out to God. And we don't know what's going to happen. Now, with those kinds of broad definitions in place, let me bring this, I hope, to a specific point regarding the relevancy of these studies or these psalms. You have been there. To one degree or another, you've been sorrowed over personal sin or circumstances have overwhelmed you. And right here, you have someone who knows how you feel. Someone who was inspired to God to pray the kind of prayer God hopes you will pray. And have the kind of trust and the kind of resolve that is really what you need when you're overwhelmed. So these are invaluable. And we ought to read them. We ought to read them over and over and over. And you will find that some of these psalms really speak loudly to what it might be that is on your mind and on your heart at this time. Some you might read over for years, but only when circumstances in your life change do all of a sudden they jump out and grab you. And you find that now this is what is relevant to your needs and situation. I'll say in passing that there are other kinds of psalms, not just laments, but there are psalms of thanksgiving, there are creation psalms, there are messianic psalms, and there are numerous types of praise psalms that talk about praising God for His creation, like Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth His handiwork. There are psalms also not only of praise for God's creation and power, like 19, 1 and following, and Psalm 139, but there are also praise hymns regarding what God has done and His activity in history. And so, thinking about that, we can see a broad array of different kinds of psalms. I want to look here, if you're still with me in Psalm 102, to now some specific statements, verses here in this psalm that will be more specific than in our study this morning than what we have said thus far. But I hope with that background, you will appreciate what's going on here in Psalm 102. This is the prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed and poureth out his complaint unto the Lord. This is what he prayed at the time. And these are the thoughts that he had. We'll generally see something like this when we read a lament. Number one, God is addressed. Number two, there is some kind of complaint or condition that is explained. But third, there is this resolution that no matter what happens, even though I don't know what's going to happen, even though I don't know the outcome, I will trust in you and I will praise you no matter what. But, please help. There's a petition. There's a request. And these are characteristics of a lament psalm. Read with me here in Psalm 102, beginning in verse 1. Hear my prayer, O Jehovah, and let my cry come unto thee. Hide not thy face from me in the day of my distress. Incline thine ear unto me, In the day when I call, answer me speedily. And you can see, maybe a little bit different from how we would express something, but yet you can see the idea here is, God, please help me. There's a sense of urgency here. And asking God, not just to help, but please help me now. That's what he says. In the day that I call, answer me speedily. We would say, oh God, please help me right now. I need your help. The situation is explained in the following verses, verses 3 through 11. Verse 3. For my days consume away like smoke, and my bones are burned as a firebrand. My heart is smitten like grass and withered, for I forgot to eat my bread. By reason of the voice of my groaning, my bones cleave to my flesh. I am like a pelican in the wilderness. I am become as an owl of the waste places. I watch and become like a sparrow that is alone upon the housetop. Mine enemies reproach me all the day. They that are mad against me do curse by me. For I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping. Because of thine indignation and thy wrath, for thou hast taken me up and cast me away. My days are like a shadow that declineth, and I am withered like grass. Now you can see, reading through these verses, that there is the extensive use of imagery. And these are the things that would come to his mind in terms of his own experiences in life and culture and the kinds of expressions he would use. We would probably use different expressions. Like, I'm nothing but skin and bones. You know what that means when someone's describing their physical condition and that they are wasting away and they're in poor health. And we all have different kinds of expressions. And the wonderful thing about the book of Psalms is that because sometimes we're unfamiliar with the expressions, we have to slow down. And we have to read over it. We have to think about it. We have to try to figure it out. And then we put it into just straightforward language. And that process helps us really internalize what is being said. And slowing down and thinking about it in depth is really where we make it relevant and personal and find the ultimate value. So let's do that. Let's just kind of work through these images and see if we can't understand how these expressions describe his experience. For my days consume away like smoke. So what happens when you see smoke? What happens? There's a fire. And you see the smoke. What? Just knowing from your common experience, what happens? Well, that smoke, it rises. And what?
Vanishes.
Just vanishes. It just goes. It disappears. And there's nothing then, in terms of that particular image, that remains. And it's almost as if he says, my days are like that. They're just gone. And the days have been spent in worry and anxiety and suffering, and now they're gone, and it's as if my life is just a waste of time. This is how he feels. Notice the additional component to his suffering. And my bones are burned as a firebrand. So this is an image of intense heat, but he says my bones are burning like a firebrand, like something that's exceedingly hot, red hot. Have you ever said something about the fact, or maybe experienced pain, you said, oh, I just hurt all the way down to my bones? In other words, you're trying to convey that the degree of this pain is intense. Jill's nephew, our nephew, her brother's little boy, broke his arm a couple weeks ago. And it was a complete fracture through both of his bones and his forearm. And so he was there in the emergency room, and they were trying to get him, for some reason, to give them an indication of the pain level he was experiencing. So they said, on a scale of 1 to 10, right, that's how one way we talk about pain, on a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of pain are you experiencing? So he's like 8 years old, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, and he's just, oh. So then the second attempt is holding up a chart of happy faces. Have you seen those in the hospital? The happy face, you know, from happy and then kind of, you know, a little frown and then all the way to this, you know, real sad intense face. Which one are you? And it's like he's, and it's like, just look at his face and look, he's, you can see which one he is. Well, you know, we talk about pain in terms of degrees, and what this person is saying is on a scale of 1 to 10, it's 10. So when you look at this verse, you see two components to his suffering already. Number one, mental, and number two, physical. He looks at his days and he says, it seems like the only thing I'm doing is dealing with this problem. Nothing productive, nothing of what I would like to be doing, but all I am doing is dealing with this. And so he talks about the mental component and he talks about the physical component. And you know, many of you suffering with physical problems and illnesses or injuries or whatever it might be. It's not just a physical issue. It's your mind too, right? The stress of your mind. It is a multifaceted issue. And it's not just the pain. It's also the stress of not being able to do what you want to do. And this is something we can all relate to. Look at verse 4. My heart is smitten like grass and withereth. Now, we're all familiar with this image, likely. If you drive around here in the springtime in the next couple of months when we start getting the rain and we get the rain through the wintertime and we see these beautiful hills, right? And they turn green. But it doesn't take long when the rain stops, right? May, June, and it starts getting hot. How do those green hills look then? When the heat and the lack of precipitation combine in those late spring, early summer months, those hills turn brown, right? So he takes an image like that and says, now this is what's happened to me. In the past, once, if you could have known me several months ago, I was walking around healthy and happy and vibrant, but now I'm an entirely different picture. I have just withered in the blistering sun. The lack of good things, so to speak, the rain or whatever it might be, I have just withered away, something we might say. I've just withered away. And notice verse 4, the last part. For I forgot to eat my bread. Now this is interesting. And you've probably, many of you anyway, experienced something like this. The compounding layers of problems. That as they stack one upon another, they make things more difficult and more challenging. Now what happens, let's say, for instance, if you've experienced an injury or you've been through surgery or you're dealing with some kind of disease or something, and then you do have these issues of your mind and worrying maybe about things that you can't do and so forth, a lot of times you don't want to eat. You don't have an appetite, right? You're not the same old you. But what happens if you don't eat? You can't get stronger. But you don't feel like eating. And these kinds of things just spiral downwards. And if you've experienced some kind of injury or accident or illness or something like that, you know that kind of experience. And people will be force-feeding you, you know, trying to get liquids, trying to get food down you because this is what's going to help you recover. But when you don't have an appetite and you don't want to eat, he says in this way, I forgot to eat my bread. He was so distressed. This is the expression he would use. I just didn't even remember that I needed to eat. So these are the kinds of expressions that he would use to talk about these layers of suffering, these layers of challenges that compounded the situation. Notice verse 5. By reason of the voice of my groaning, my bones cleaved to my flesh. This is a summary of his condition. Because I was so intensely suffering. That's what the first part of the verse means. Because of the reason of the voice of my groaning. In other words, he was in a condition that he just groaned. So we're talking about a picture of intense suffering. And he says, because of the nature of my mental and physical anguish, my bones cleave to my flesh. So what kind of condition is he in? Intense suffering, nothing but skin and bones. And it's not merely a physical problem. It is a mental struggle. It is a daily struggle. And it is, in essence, compounded by many different things. So here you see at least the intensity of what we're talking about. And a lament is not when you are just discomforted. A lament is not just when, well, things aren't going my way. So you can see that this speaks to someone, and someone like you or someone who's experienced things like many of you have at certain times in your life. And this is intense and difficult, and you just don't know if you're going to be able to make it. And this is the level of intensity. Now look at these next verses. And if these words really mean something to you, you're going to relate to the next section as well in a powerful way. I am like a pelican in the wilderness. I am like become as an owl of the waste places. And again, these are the expressions he would use that he would immediately think of where he lived and the time he lived. And they were familiar with these kinds of birds that were just lonely birds out in the middle of nowhere. Maybe he had traveled at some time in his life through the countryside, maybe in the Judean hills or down in the Jordan Valley. He had been in the middle of nowhere before and knew that these kinds of birds, you know, they're just out there. They don't have any friends. Nobody talks to them. They're just out there. And can you see how, in addition to the other things, he feels lonely. He is alone. And isn't it the case that you can actually be lonely in a crowded room? It's not just the presence of people that creates comfort and security and fellowship. It's the camaraderie. And it's the intimacy and the sharing and the communication. That's what creates a feeling of togetherness. But he is suffering. He feels isolated. And isn't it the case, once again, sometimes we make our situations worse? Haven't you ever felt like staying home and just being alone? And sometimes we do need that. But you also know that sometimes you just, like when you need to eat, even though you don't have an appetite, sometimes you need to get out. And you need to fellowship, and you need to be with the church, and you need to be in worship, even if you don't feel like it. That's what you need. And yet, here's how he felt. He knows how you felt. He knows you have felt lonely and alone and withdrawn and isolated. And look at verse 7. It's similar in nature. I watch and become like a sparrow. That is alone. Look at verse 7. That's the word to circle there. Alone. On the housetop. You know, like the little sparrow. Some think maybe the picture is of a little sparrow that's lost its mate, perched. and waiting and waiting and waiting. Waiting, wondering what's going to happen. Is the mate going to return? And a feeling of real loneliness and despair sets in the longer time goes on. And this is then the picture of a mental, of a physical, of a social compounding layers of struggle and suffering. Notice verse 8, as if it wasn't bad enough, he has to suffer the ridicule of others. Mine enemies reproach me all the day. So about the only one that has anything to say to him are those who don't like him. The vultures, you know, they're just out there waiting for something to happen so they can, you know, feed on the situation. They that are mad against me do curse by me. In other words, he says, here's what they do to me. When they want to curse somebody, when they want to give somebody an insult, they use my name. My name is the worst word they can think of. So they use my name to insult somebody. And they say to somebody that they want to insult in the most hideous way, I hope you end up like him. And so he adds to all the things that are part of his condition, the reality that there are some wicked and evil and hateful people only making his situation more unbearable. And so, in a summation of his condition, he returns to some images, things that he would think of. For I've eaten ashes like bread. You remember in Old Testament times and even New Testament, someone clothing themselves in sackcloth and ashes as a symbol of mourning. He says, I've eaten ashes like bread. I mean, I've had ashes on me so much. It's just like a daily thing. And I've mingled my drink with weeping. He can't even pause and have a drink of water, have a moment, not even a moment of relief. Even when he goes to just have a drink of water, he's weeping into his cup. Verse 10. Now this is interesting, and it's somewhat of a change in the development of these verses. Because of thine indignation and wrath. This is why this is happening. Because of your indignation and wrath. So in addition to the mental and the physical and the social, and these different parts of his suffering, so to speak, there's the spiritual dimension. And he wonders, is all this happening to me because of what I've done to myself? And at least he reflects that this was what was in his mind. This is just the consequence of the road I have taken. And he expresses it in this way. You've taken me up and you just cast me down. And then he summarizes, my days are like a shadow that declineth. The long shadow is just about over. And again he says, I'm withered like grass. I'm just about ready to be ground up, dried up, and blown away. Well, here then is the lament. Now, that would be somewhat of a depressing study if that's all there was here. But laments are not diary entries. They are not merely thoughts on paper of what a person is going through. And here's what makes a lament different from sometimes our complaints. There is now then the focus on what do I need to do? I don't know how many times I've had people call up and want to talk about problems, but never want to talk about what we need to do. Never want to talk about solutions. Well, here is the principle here, that once we realize that we are overwhelmed and struggling, we really do need to focus on solutions. We need to focus on what we can do, what we can control, what we can implement. And at the basis of what we can do is God. God is at the foundation. He is the cornerstone of what we can do. In spite of not knowing what's going to happen. Look at verse 12 and let's quickly consider some of the things here that are in his mind as he thinks about coping with the suffering. But thou, O Jehovah, will abide forever, and thy memorial name unto all generations. Thou wilt arise and have mercy on Zion, for it is time to have pity on her. This may be, if there's anything in this psalm that gives a historical indication, it may be this. That the suffering was a part of a national calamity, which in general would have been because of their sins. And God would bring foreign oppression, there would be suffering. And this may have been the original context. Regardless, God is the answer. And one thing he says here, reflected in different verses, is that God is above time, God is above circumstances. God's not affected by anything outside himself. God, we might say, is concrete. He is stable. He is immovable. And what he is going to do is notice that we can tap into that. Since God is immovable, since he is absolutely unaffected by circumstances outside himself, if we can anchor to that, we can gain strength, even if we don't know what's going to happen. Like the ship, in the harbor, tied down to security. It may move a little bit out there, but it's secure. Untied, it can drift. God is above time and circumstances, and he is the one to whom we need to look to, appeal to, and trust. Let's read through these verses. Make a couple of observations as time permits here. Verse 14 says, "For thy servants take pleasure in her stones. Have pity upon her dust." You start seeing the petition come through. "So the nations shall fear the name of Jehovah, and all the kings of thy earth shall glory. For Jehovah hath built up Zion, he hath appeared in his glory, he hath regarded the prayer of the destitute, and hath not despised their prayer." God, I know you've listened to people in the past. I know you really care about us and know what's going on. And thus the petition. So, in reflecting upon these various things, he makes this interesting observation. Verse 18. "This shall be written for generations to come, and a people shall be created, and a people which shall be created shall praise Jehovah. For he hath looked down from the height of his sanctuary, from heaven did Jehovah behold the earth, to hear the sign of the prisoner, to loose those that are pointed to death, that men may declare the name of Jehovah in Zion, and praise, and his praise in Jerusalem." Notice what he says. This is about all we'll have time for. "I know you've looked down from your sanctuary." You're not just up there unconcerned. You've looked down. And you have acted in the past. I mean, there were people right at the point of death. And you delivered them. You loosed the prisoner. And those appointed to death. And the petition then comes forth. "Lord, I don't know what's going to happen. But I trust in you. I know you can do something. Lord, please help me. Please help me now." And no matter what, it ends up, "I'll praise you. Your people will praise you. We will always praise you. And please, Lord, please look down and have mercy and compassion on us." It's a wonderful study. And there are many more like it in this book. They don't just speak to us, they speak for us. And I hope we'll be more and more acquainted with this wonderful book. And indeed, if we are, we can become stronger in the future than we have been in the past. Thank you this morning for your attention and interest in our class.